I don't know who's introducing the speaker. I guess nobody's going to introduce the speaker. So today's talk is about K3 surfaces, modular forms, and non-geometric heterotic compact applications. And I want to start out with some remarks about F-theory. So there's a fair amount of overlap with the talk I gave last May-ish, maybe even in June, which a number of you were probably at, but you're not required to remember a talk from May until now. So I'll sort of remind you again. And my point of view on the role of the elliptic modular functions in F-theory has actually evolved slightly in the last few months. So if I happen to have a physical theory with an SL2Z symmetry, and that physical theory had a complex scalar field, which I knew had positive imaginary part, and on which the SL2Z acted by the standard linear fractional transformation action, then it's a natural thing to try, and this idea in some form goes back to the work on stringing cosmic strings of Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao. It's natural to try to think of building models, maybe effective theories in lower dimension, in which the tau is allowed to vary. So typically we're going to let tau vary over a surface, and then exploit the SL2Z action. Well, we're going to have some defects in this surface, which are places where tau isn't well defined, because I'm going to exploit the SL2Z action to allow monodromy behavior of tau as I move around in that surface, and hope to build some physical model in that way. So Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao wrote down the kind of metric behavior that you would need to have near this surface, or on this surface, I should say, in order to get a thing like this to behave. Subsequently, Vafa and many other people, subsequently means like, you know, 7 or 8 years later, Vafa and some other people, many other people, developed F-theory, in which this is this idea is realized very explicitly. So F-theory starts from the type 2B string theory, which has a complex scalar. Well, it has two real scalars, and there's a natural complexification of them. It has the SL2Z action, it's believed, on the complex scalar. And so this becomes a natural context in which to try to construct such models. So you take that 2B theory, you make an 8-dimensional, so 2B, type 2B string theory is in 10 dimensions. We make some 8-dimensional effective physical theory by allowing tau to vary in this 2-dimensional surface, and then trying to work out the properties of the effective theory in 8 dimensions that's left over, and exploiting this monodromy and SL2Z symmetry. Now, I think everybody knows that the J function, J of tau, is the natural SL2Z invariant function. And so it's natural to try to, first step to try to express everything basically in terms of J of tau and things derived from J of tau. That's essentially what Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao did in the stringy cosmic string business. But what we started to realize when we explored F-theory models in lower dimension is that J of tau doesn't capture all of the information about this kind of SL2Z problem, particularly if the families of SL2Z objects, if tau itself is going, not tau itself, but if the families of SL2Z invariant objects are going to be also varying with respect to other parameters. So in algebraic geometry, this goes by the name, well, it goes by the phrase that elliptic curves don't have a fine moduli space. You need a little bit of extra information. And there turns out to be a very natural way to encode some additional information, which is enough to sensibly discuss a lot of these lower dimensional families. And that is to use Eisenstein series. So I don't know the history so well, but I learned in complex analysis a long time ago that Weierstrass had introduced this cool P function. The Weierstrass P function, and what does it do? So it should be a function that depends on z and also on tau. And I want to take a sum over, I guess I have to put a 1 over z squared, and then I take a sum over mn not equal 0, 0 of 1 over z minus m tau minus n squared, but then I have to take and subtract 1 over m tau plus n squared, or else it won't converge. So that's the sort of clever way of getting the sum. And then Weierstrass worked out that, so this is a meromorphic doubly periodic function in the plane with periods 1 and tau. And Weierstrass worked out through this computation that's not very hard at all, nice allometric computation, let's see, so you calculate rho prime of z, which looks like minus 2 over z cubed, plus sum mn not equals 0, 0. Now I don't need to worry about the difference business anymore. Z minus m tau minus n cubed. And then you can work out a relation. So at least the beginning of this relation is pretty clear. If I take rho of z prime, that sort of starts out 4 over z cubed. On the other hand, if I take rho cubed, that'll start out 1 over z cubed, 1 over z to the 6, excuse me. So rho prime of z squared minus rho of z cubed. And then it's not too hard to see that there's a few.
So rho is p.
I'm saying rho when I meant p, yes, I'm sorry. It looks sort of like a row. I'm this great advocate that the only acceptable use of a particular tech symbol is for the Weierstrass P function. So I shouldn't be calling it other things. I think this is a special symbol only for Weierstrass. But I've got to put in some coefficients and maybe now I cheat and look them up. So if I put in the coefficients, see, I'm fortunately am hampered by the following. I gave this talk a month ago, and then I can't find the notes. So it's very sad. I had all these nice notes prepared. So let's see if I've got it. So my claim is, let's see. So let me abandon this for a second. So right, hopefully people know how this goes. That we're doing Laurent expansions of these guys. We've matched the leading term, and then it turns out that if you also take rho of z multiplied by an appropriate coefficient and a constant term, you end up with something which is doubly periodic, holomorphic because you've canceled all the poles, and even by adjusting the constant term appropriately, zero at the origin. And that tells you it has to be identically zero because it's a bounded holomorphic function on the plane. So Weierstrass ended up with this nice expression, and I'm going to write it in the form after some small change of normalization, which I don't have properly written in my notes. I'm going to write it in this form, where the E2Ks are normalized Eisenstein series, sum of 1 over, this is mn not equal 0, 0 still, m tau plus n raised to the 2k. So it's not at all surprising that when you take Lorentz expansions of rho prime and rho, you end up with expressions like this showing up, and it's just a question of keeping track of the coefficients in some nice way. I don't have a 4 here, so I've changed the normalization a little bit, but x and y are proportional somehow to rho, or maybe 4 rho, and even that I'm not going to. X is proportional to p, and y is proportional to p prime. There, that's an accurate statement. So I apologize for not having the factors at hand, but that's the basic result. So J, you end up expressing easily in terms of these things. Actually, the first thing you do is you write down the discriminant. The discriminant marks when the... what I've just done is written an equation for C mod 1 and tau, and in terms of these Eisenstein series, which are not quite modular forms, but scale in some nice way, not quite modular functions, they scale in some nice way, which makes them modular forms, and they describe the corresponding torus, not just in terms of the J, but in terms of actual coefficients that would go into an algebraic equation. You can write down an expression, the natural expression which tells you whether the thing is singular or not is this one. And by the way, my convention matches the convention of the F-theory literature, not of the number theory literature. There's some power of 2 off in this. But it's a fundamental identity on these Eisenstein series that combination is the Dedekind eta function raised to the 24th up to an appropriate constant. That identifies the delta. And then there's a J, right? So if you really wanted the J of tau in terms of these things, so again, up to a constant, which I haven't worked out properly, J looks like E4 cubed divided by delta. So you can work out the modular invariant quantities out of these Eisenstein series, but the Eisenstein series now have the following advantage. I can treat them a little bit abstractly as coefficients. So let me call them G2 and G3. And then I can imagine allowing G2 and G3, following the F-theory literature, let me call them F and G. Then I can allow F and G to depend on some additional parameters. So the original F-theory construction was sort of 2 dimensions down from the physical theory with the SL2Z invariants. That gave us these 8-dimensional F-theory models, and there was exactly one of them for each... I'm saying this wrong. Let me back up and say it better. For each tau, I have this object, y squared equals x cubed plus fx plus g, which captures crucial information about tau. It's not unique because I can do some scaling of f and g, but if f and g are depending non-trivially on parameters, I could scale by constant things, but I'm not allowed to scale by things which vanish. So there's actually more information in families written in this way than simply trying to write the J function itself in families. That's right. So now I want to consider as an elliptic family over some base. So I want to consider F to be a section of some line bundle, typically written in the form L to the 4th, G to be a section of some other line bundle, typically written in the form L to the 6th, and now I have a family of elliptic curves. So if I have a family, so now I'm imagining that F and G depend on some parameters. And if my family, if the base of the family is one-dimensional, so if I have one-parameter families of elliptic curves, then Kodaira classified all the possible things that can happen. So let's see, just to make sure we get the statement correct, what I have here is an elliptic vibration with section. I've written it in an explicit Weierstrass form, and therefore I have a section, I'm assuming that. And so on Kodaira's list, there's some things called multiple fibers. They never show up if there is a section, so I've suppressed them from the list. But Kodaira classified all the singular behavior in codimension 1. And he found, well, you could describe what was going on by asking at the singular point, what was the order of vanishing of F, what was the order of vanishing of G, what was the order of vanishing of delta. And just those three orders of vanishing completely determined the local type of the behavior. Moreover, just in terms of those three orders of vanishing, you could read off the monodromy that is obtained by encircling the singular point one time. So I encircle the singular point one time. I have tau going to some A tau plus B over C tau plus D. When I do that, and those are the possible monodromies corresponding to behaviors in these geometric equations. There's a last line on here which says non-minimal. There's a notion which I think was probably defined by Kodaira, although it might have been actually in Neron's work or someplace, where the Weierstrass model is a so-called non-minimal Weierstrass model. That simply means that there's a change of coordinates that you could make that would simultaneously reduce the orders of vanishing of F, G, and delta for the physical applications. For reasons that I'll explain in a minute or two, we never reach that line. In mathematics, if you reach that line, you simply do that division and you then analyze what's left. So you might have to do it more than once. You might have very high orders of vanishing of F, G, and delta, but after some finite number of times, assuming that the generic fiber really is non-singular, after a finite number of times, you really will reach some specific place on Kodaira's list. Well, when F-theory was constructed, these singularities are identified with, well, the singularities have a very clear physical meaning in terms of the type 2B string theory, or at least some of them do. That's because we can sort of think what physical process it is that is associated with a multivaluedness of tau and what kinds of multivaluedness of tau we should expect to find. So, for example, if you have the type 2B theory with a stack of ND7 brains, then you exactly expect the monodromy behavior to be 1N01. So that gets identified with Kodaira's type ISMN. And if you have the type 2B theory with MD7 brains plus an orientifold plane, let's see. This is in my missing notes. There's a shift, right? I want 4. O7 has charge minus 4. Yeah. So I want minus 1, M minus 4, 0, minus 1. So that's an I, M minus 4 star. So these are situations in which something about the 2B theory, there are solutions that have been written down to the 2B theory with these properties called brain, that make them called brains, in which it's understood that the tau is not single-valued and has this monodromy behavior. And the interpretation that has been offered for the rest is that this is 2B
with some kind of exotic brains. And these exotic brains, by the way, are not weakly coupled. So that corresponds to the other Kodaira types. So weak coupling corresponds to J infinite, and these are exactly the cases where J is infinite. If J is finite, then I have what's often called finite coupling, order one coupling, and so the fact that there haven't been, people haven't written down perturbative 2B solutions with those behaviors is not all that surprising. It wasn't supposed to be a perturbative solution to begin with. Okay, so by using this sort of refined information about how to describe elliptic curves, namely by not just the modular invariant function J, but by appropriate modular forms, Eisenstein series in this case, and then sort of comparing the geometric information about degenerations. By the way, this also comes with quite a bit of geometry about what happens near these singular points, which Kodaira also worked out. The total space of the elliptic vibration has a singularity, which is a type an minus 1 in this case, a2, a3, d4, dn minus 4, e6, e7, and e8. Just one additional piece of information. By comparing sort of information about the geometry with the with these constructions, we learn something about these exotic F-theory constructions. So F-theory from this point of view could be thought of as a non-geometric compactification of the type 2B string. It's been around for so long and it's so familiar that people tend to think of it as being a pretty geometric thing. In particular, there's a duality between F-theory and M-theory, which tells you that if you take the total space of the elliptic vibration and compactify M-theory on that, that you get something physically equivalent to the original F-theory model compactified on one additional circle. So the geometry of the total space of the elliptic vibration definitely plays a clear role in that story. Well, I can repeat this story for other physical theories with interesting discrete symmetry groups, even discrete symmetry groups which don't respect the perturbative analysis of the theory. So that's what happened in the type 2B case. And there's a case which has been around for a long time, which the people have looked at from time to time, and that is to think about the heterotic string. So the heterotic string has a duality group, and I'm going to take the heterotic string just on a 2 torus. So what do I mean by that? It means I take the heterotic string, actually either one of the heterotic strings, your choice of gauge group, and I formulate it on, compactified on a 2 torus to give an effective 8-dimensional theory. Now, just like the moduli for the scalar field in 2B theory was the upper half plane mod SL2Z, here the moduli for scalars in this effective 8-dimensional theory is a symmetric space SO218 mod SO2 cross SO18 modded out by an appropriate arithmetic group, which just for simplicity I'm going to call SO218Z. We'll have to be more precise about this in a bit. So there's a moduli for scalars that behaves in this way. And you could hope to do a similar sort of thing. You could hope to construct, for example, a 6D theory by taking a two-parameter some surface, right, to allow these scalars to vary over that surface according to the SO218 space, and then sort of glue them together using, well, there are probably going to have to be defects where there are monodromy things going on, but once you've sort of taken those into account, you should be able to glue them together and get non-geometric heterotic compactifications. So they're going to be non-geometric in the following sense. If the heterotic string on T2 has a large volume T2, then we have to be near a boundary point of this space, which I'm just going to call script M. So a general compactification, which goes far away from that boundary point, won't have a large volume interpretation. And typically, to get a sigma model interpretation of the resulting theory, you want to be able to scale everything up and take it to be large volume. In your two-parameter family, you'll be able to do that in some regions of the two-parameter space, but not in other regions of the two-parameter space. In fact, when you look near that boundary point, so near the boundary point, the duality group is different. So near the boundary point, you get a duality group which has an SL2Z tau, and then it has some other stuff having to do with, well, typically people write it as SL2Z rho for the Kähler moduli, and then maybe together with some Wilson lines. But if you want to have a large radius limit, then this one is restricted to just be translation in the B field. So you remove the possibility of a rho goes to 1 over rho transformation if you really want a large volume limit. So how do I want to attack this problem? Well, I can do something analogous. Hellman, McGreevy, and Williams did something analogous to Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao. So this kind of was done by Hellman, McGreevy, and Williams. And what they did was they wrote down, to be precise, they weren't probably doing the heterotic string, but what they were interested in was getting both tau and rho monodromies into the picture. So at least if I turn off all the Wilson lines, I'm exactly talking about their situation. And they imagined singularities where there was some kind of rho singularity, other singularities where there was some kind of tau singularity, and they had a way of writing down metric descriptions, maybe not quite as precise as the ones Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao had written down, but some rough description of what the singularity would look like. And for example, it's known that if you want a compactification in this context which preserves, which has certain anomalies vanish, then you would have wanted, in the original Green, Shapir, Vafa, and Yao, you would have wanted 24 of these tau singularities. That corresponds to the number of singular fibers in elliptically fibered K3. And in the Hellman, McGreevy, Williams construction, basically one of their solutions separates this off so that you get 12 rho singularities and 12 tau singularities. So you have both the both a kind of standard geometric tau monodromies and then some weird non-geometric rho monodromies showing up in the same model. Okay, so what I forgot to say at the outset, and but meant to, was that this is based on two projects. The first was joint with McCorrist and Sethi, and here it is. I'll tell you its number. It has a number, as all good things do. 1004-5447. And a second one, joint with Malmendier and, okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here, 1102. There we go. That sounds good, right? Oh, it could even be 1101. Who knows?
So dealing with this complete space directly and with modular forms on this space is sort of beyond immediate computational ability of anybody, but there are special cases. So inside of these SO218 spaces, we actually have, inside of M, as I called it, we actually have natural spaces SO2 row. This is a row. SO2 cross SO row, modulo an appropriate arithmetic group. And, from the heterotic point of view, what you imagine doing is restricting where the Wilson lines in the theory are to be allowed. So if you want to keep if you do keep 18 minus rho Wilson lines set to zero, then typically that causes the group itself to be remaining gauge group in the effective theory to still have a relatively high rank. In 10 dimensions, it had E8 cross E8 or spin 32 mod Z2 as the structure. And what we're going to do is have groups that have relatively high rank. But then the nice thing is, if rho is small, we can give other descriptions of these spaces, which make it much easier to handle the structure of modular forms on the space. So the interesting cases are going to be rho equals 2, so that's no Wilson lines, all Wilson lines turned off. And rho equal 3, which is going to correspond to one Wilson line. You have to be careful, you know, where you're choosing your one Wilson line to say what's unbroken. So otherwise said, from the point of view of physics, either I have the E8 cross E8 group unbroken or a spin 32 mod Z2 unbroken in these first two cases. And in these cases, either I have an E8 cross E7 unbroken, or I have a spin 28 cross SP something. What is it? It's got to be in one of these things. Andreas, do you remember what it is? Okay. Cross something, mod Z2. I think it's just cross SU2, mod Z2. So I'm interested in those four particular cases. Compactifications of the heterotic string on T2 with very few Wilson lines turned on so that I have these groups unbroken. And what I'm wanting to do is write down an analog of the Eisenstein series analysis of what those things look like, some geometry that's carried by the modular forms for these groups, and then couple that with enough information about things like degenerations so that I ought to be able to put together the whole thing into a non-geometric heterotic compactification. And the tool here that I want to use is actually heterotic F-theory duality. So I will admit to a sleight of hand, and the sleight of hand is, well, first I kind of argued that F-theory was a non-geometric type 2B compactification. Now I'm going to say, but it's so geometric that I can use the geometric understanding I get from F-theory to build truly non-geometric heterotic compactifications. So I'll get my hands on the heterotic theories with these gauge groups by doing an F-theory construction. Then we'll show, quoting some results of a guy named Kumar from MIT who's not in the room, together with Klinger and Duran. I don't know if you ever met this guy, a math postdoc at MIT.
What's his first name?
Adrian? Yeah, Abhinav. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. No, there's Adrian Klinger. There is a person named Adrian. Klinger and Duran are the other guys who are partly responsible for this story. So first of all, I need to use F-theory to write down what a heterotic string on T2 would look like if it had one of these unbroken gauge groups. And that's really pretty easy to do. I'm writing down y squared equals x cubed plus fx plus g. And f and g are supposed to be homogeneous polynomials of degree 8 and 12. Now, if I don't follow the notation on this, I'm going to really regret it. So let me see if I can do that. All right. So capital Y, capital X. And the coordinate I'm going to use on my P1 parameter space is sigma. So they're homogeneous in degree 8 and 12 in sigma. And in the EA cross E8 case, what I'm asking for is, here it is, that was 2 star, vanishing of at least order 4 in the F coordinate and exactly order 5 in the G coordinate. So that means I need to take, well, I'm writing an affine coordinate. There's a sort of maybe tau partner which goes to infinity. So I would need a sigma to the fourth at 0, a tau to the fourth at infinity, and the degrees are at least 4, but the total degree is 8. That completes the whole story. So up to a constant, which has a name, which is not written down, up to a constant, I'm forced into the sigma to the fourth. And then here I can have a sigma to the fifth. Total degree is 12. That would have been implicitly tau to the seventh, right? I can have a sigma to the sixth, or I can have a sigma to the seventh. That would have been tau to the fifth. That's the minimum degree that you need at infinity. So I have these 3 terms. So since I'm completely abandoning my notation about the constants, let me just write them that way. So there's the family of unbroken E8 cross E8 models. This family was already written down by Vafa and myself in the second paper ever written about F-theory. So it's been around for a long time. I could do EA cross E7 as well. And to do EA cross E7, that's EA cross E8. So to do EA cross E7, these are not the right notes. Okay. To do EA cross E7, I'll just randomly decide that I've got to do A0 sigma cubed plus A1 sigma to the fourth x, and then these are the same. You see, for the E7, so I'm assuming that I'm taking E7 at the origin, and for the E7, I wanted order exactly 3 and then at least 5. So the 5 part didn't really change. And the 3 tells me that if I really want E7, so it'll be E8 cross E7 if A0 is not 0. Right? And if A0 is equal to 0, then it goes back up to E8 cross E8. There are... Yes?
Sigma on P1.
Pardon? Yes, sigma is on P1. Sigma is a local coordinate on P1. There's the tau that I'm kind of suppressing is the other homogeneous coordinate.
The elliptic curve degenerates at 2 points, 1...
One at zero and one at infinity.
They give you the 2 gauge groups.
Give you the 2 components of the gauge group. Right.
I have a question.
Yes?
So this SO218 quotient, SO18, this giant marginalized space on the hydraulic side?
Yes.
Which is non-geometric. Is the entire marginalized space accessible from the F-theory side? Or in the sense that... can you understand all these non-geometric ones from...
So here's the problem. As what I'm about to give you is a very tight connection between these coefficients and modular forms for the moduli space. But I don't know how to do that in more generality, and part of the reason I don't know how to do that is because I have many choices here, like put one of the singularities at zero and the other at infinity. So I've removed some of the ambiguity in the coordinates, and I don't know how to do that in general. So that's really the obstruction to extending this beyond the cases that we've done. So you can also do it for the other cases. Let me just mention this spin 28 cross SU2 mod Z2 case. That one looks like x cubed plus a different plus a cubic polynomial, s times a cubic polynomial in s. Cubic polynomial in S times x squared plus epsilon s to the 8th x y squared. So there's some other form which applies to the this case.
How do the dimensions work? So on the hadronic side, we compactify on T2. And on the F-field side, should we have a... No, we compactify on the T2, and that be fiber over some base space, right?
So I was compactifying on T2. Now I'm taking a one-parameter family of those. So on the hadronic side, I'm really compactifying on K3.
So I have the Calabi-Yau on the F-theory side, the Calabi-Yau free fall on the F-theory side.
Wait, I think I just said it backwards. No, on the hadronic side, I'm compactifying on T2, right? And then on the F-theory side, I'm getting... F-theory on a elliptically fibered K3.
But this, then I fiber again over some base.
Then we're going to fiber this over some base. So right now, A, B, and C, D, C and D are actually constant coefficients, but we're going to fiber them over a base with letting them depend on parameters.
Shouldn't the last term linear?
This... Well, this spin 28 or the spin 32 case, you might remember, is slightly peculiar because I'm not writing it in F and G form.
Yeah.
Okay. You thought it was linear?
Yeah.
I'm willing to let it be linear.
Oh, and then sigma to the
epsilon S? That doesn't look right to me. But since I don't have the notes, I can't tell you. There's some form. So let's see. I want to tell you a couple of remarkable things about this. One is, and there's a special version of it. So there's a special version of it, which is the spin 32 case. And again, these are not really new. This one was written down... By Aspinwall and Gross, again in the very early days of F-theory, and I don't know exactly the first people to write down the Wilson line modifications, but they're not difficult. So remarkable fact number one is that this K3 is actually birational to the K3 that I get from the spin 32 mod Z2 case. And this K3, with an appropriate matching of coefficients. And this K3 is birational to the one I get from spin 28 cross SU2 mod Z2. So what does that mean? It means that there's some non-singular K3, and that non-singular K3 has two different elliptic vibrations. And one of those elliptic vibrations expresses it as the dual of the E8 cross E8 hadronic string, and the other one expresses it as the dual of the spin 32 mod Z2. So that's sort of a nifty fact. And what it actually means is that the work that we're about to do to write down a version of this family in which the coefficients are modular forms on the moduli space, we can do either way and use this birational fact to transform the expression from one side to the other. So it doesn't matter which one we do. So I have to tell you, so in the SO22 case, SO22 is SL2 S, what is it? SO22 cross SO2 cross SO2 mod SO2 cross SO2 is upper half plane cross upper half plane. And this case, I can think of those two parameters as tau and rho. This really is the case where there's an interpretation on the heterotic side of one of them being the complex structure of the torus, the other being the Kähler, complexified Kähler structure of the torus. And this was the original setting that Hellman, McGreevy, and Williams considered, where they wanted variation in both of these cases. And as you can expect, the Eisenstein series that we are most interested in here will be Eisenstein series of tau and also Eisenstein series of rho. So we'll see in a couple minutes that the we're able in that case to write the family of K3s whose F-theory model gives the dual of the heterotic explicitly in terms of these Eisenstein series. That's no Wilson lines. In the case when there is one Wilson line, I've got SO23 mod SO2 cross SO3, and that's also known as the Siegel upper half space for genus 2. So, and of course I'm modding out by some arithmetic group, so when I mod out by the arithmetic group, that's the natural parameter space for curves of genus 2. So how's a curve of genus 2 related to the previous case? Well, one way of thinking of the data represented by rho and tau is I had my elliptic curve, E sub tau, on which I was compactifying the heterotic string. But if I have the complex structure data of that curve, I can introduce an auxiliary curve. Sorry, I've got too many E's on the board. Here, let's make these curves. Okay. An auxiliary curve, E sub rho, which has sort of the geometry of that information in it. And in fact, it turns out that the geometry behind the correspondence is that if you take the Coomer surface of E tau cross E rho, well, that's related by some 2-to-1 cover to this K3 that characterizes the data. That process of taking 2-to-1 covers of Coomer surfaces is called building a Shioda-Inizé correspondence. And for me, the sad footnote to this whole story is that I proved a theorem about Shioda-Inizé correspondences in the early 1980s, which is a theorem I'm very proud of, like it a lot, and it never occurred to me that you could use it to address this problem. Other people had to teach me that. Oh well.
The genus 2, or is the Jacobian is related to the?
That's right. That was no Wilson lines. So genus 2 curves, of course, there's a degenerate limit of genus 2 curves, in which in the limit they split into a pair of genus 1 curves. And so the pair of genus 1 curves in that limit is the E tau and the E rho. But if you move away from that limit, you get an honest genus 2 curve. By the way, at that point, you've lost the geometry that you thought you were using to compactify the heterotic string, right? This E tau was supposed to be the geometric torus used to compactify the heterotic string, and now that I moved away, I've even lost track of what that was. But that's maybe not surprising for these non-geometric compactifications. I've been asserting that it's not a sigma model, there's no large radius limit, and so the picture where it really had a geometric torus capturing the data is no longer a valid one. And here as well, it'll be the Coomer surface of the Jacobian, so maybe I'll call this one script C, the Coomer surface of the Jacobian of C, which is related by this 2-to-1 cover to the K3 capturing the heterotic data. Well, The point of my old paper about Sciota-Inizé correspondences was to prove a beautiful abstract theorem about them, which meant that you never had to make explicit computations again. But here, you have to make the explicit computations. So, in a way, you know, not only did I not realize my theorem couldn't be applied, or my work, you know, was relevant, my work was kind of in the opposite direction. But we now have formulas which do this in both of these cases that are due to this Abhinav Kumar and Klinger and Durant. And to describe the formulas, I need to introduce some Eisenstein series for the group of genus 2. So Psi 2k of tau underline is going to be a sum over cd distinct denominators of the determinant of c tau plus d to the minus 2k. So that's a complete analog of the Eisenstein series definition that's used for elliptic modular curves. So this is, we're thinking now on H2, so the 2 by 2 matrices. The c and the d are 2 by 2 matrices. That's a psi, excuse me. That is a psi. Oh, good. So the modular forms that we're going to use involve these standard ones, and then they also involve some cusp forms. And the cusp forms that I care about are chi 10, which is 4, 3, 8, 6, 7, divided by 2 to the 12th, 3 cubed, 5 squared, 7 times 53. Psi 4, psi 6, minus psi 10. And another one called chi 12, which, having bored you with numbers for this one, I won't bore you with the numbers for chi 12. But it's the standard cusp form with an appropriate normalization. Yes. Which I used Maple to check for me. I was sure that it would be, but yes, it was. Now, let's see. I guess we also need to know that so I need to know the limiting behaviors, which I will read off of here. Let's see. So it's useful to know that why not? Since I now have it in front of me. 691, that's not so bad. 2 to the 13th, 3 to the 8th, 5 cubed, 7 squared.
Manipulated
21 squared psi 4 cubed plus 250 psi 6 squared minus 691 psi 12, just in case you wanted it explicitly. Where is the limit? No, these notes don't have limit. Okay, so there's some nice limiting behavior of these guys where the psi's and the chi's turn into nice products of Eisenstein series of tau and Eisenstein series of rho. And I can actually work that out post facto in a minute from the formulas I'm going to write down. So let me tell you what the modular family of K3s is. In the the modular family of K3s in the spin 30 to spin 28, etc. case is y squared equals x cubed plus s cubed minus 1/3 psi 4 s minus 2/27 psi 6 x squared, and then minus 2 to the 12th chi 10 s plus 2 to the 12th. You're right, it was linear, chi 12 x. There we go.
Yeah. So these are denominators of Bernoulli
numbers. I'm sure they are, yeah. Yeah, I don't mind knowing that, but it's not. I don't care right this minute because I'm trying to finish. And moreover, there's this nifty thing which happens, which is that if you take the limit, right? So I talked about this degeneration limit, the limit where you go back up to no Wilson lines. That limit is the limit where chi 10 goes to 0. And then you end up with y squared equals x cubed plus s cubed minus a third. And now it's the product of the Eisenstein series. So it's e4 tau, e4 rho, s minus 2/27 e6 tau, e6 rho, x squared, and then I don't have this term anymore, and I have 2 to the 10th chi 12, I have some, up to some numerical factor which I don't have at my fingertips, I have eta to the 24th, tau, eta to the 24th rho, x. So this no Wilson line case is the one that we published last spring. In this case, we found a way to express everything in terms of the Eisenstein series for the two auxiliary elliptic curves. And sort of remarkably, the coefficients which show up in the equation for the K3 are products of the coefficients which showed up in the original guy, together with the products of the discriminant loci, with the discriminant forms. So this eta is also known as delta. That's delta tau, delta rho. So it had that very pretty structure. And then that generalizes nicely here. I should have mentioned Agusa's theorem that the ring of modular forms of even weight on this particular space is actually generated by exactly these guys. So psi 4, psi 6, chi 10, chi 12 generate the ring of modular forms of even weight. So and I should have also mentioned that E4 and E6 generated the modular forms for SL2Z. In both cases, you have this natural collection of forms which transform a little bit more in a little bit more complicated way than modular functions. They provide exactly the coefficients that you need for the geometric data. Now, just one or two remarks. I mean, things like the coefficient 1 in front of here is what makes it hard to imagine extending directly in other cases. So there is a bunch of normalization that's going on in this situation. But I will mention that there's one other case that you could hope to say something reasonable about, which is SO24 mod SO2 cross SO4 mod gamma. That's another symmetric space. I think it's SL4 mod SO4, but let me put a question mark there because I've forgotten which one it was. Anyway, there's another interpretation of this particular symmetric space, so you might hope that, you know, well, it's not going to have a Agusa story of genus 2 curves, but maybe there's some story of modular forms there that might help us push it one step further. But if we have to do it, you know, dealing with modular forms directly for SO2, 18, well, let's put it this way. I would never give this to a graduate student because I always think graduate students should finish someday. So maybe I'll stop there and ask for questions.
So basically you're suggesting a duality also between F0 and harmonic string, which goes beyond the stable degeneration limit, because you take the...
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's very interesting. So could one use that for explicit computations by I don't know, calculating flat coordinates on one side and learn something about certain corrections on the hadronic string on the other side?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that correspondence shouldn't exist, right? But people didn't have a way of getting their hands on it because they didn't have these modular invariant ways of describing the corresponding theory. Now, I should say that all these modular forms for genus 2 show up in an interesting theme of work in the late 90s on threshold corrections for heterotic compactifications. Mm-hmm. Those are always down to dimension 4, and it turns out that the source, at least as best I can tell, the source of these modular forms is slightly different. It has to do with the additional T2 that you use to compactify down to dimension 4 rather than the story that we're telling here.
The standard coordinates on the Siegel upper half plane, aren't this the flat coordinates he was asking for?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
I mean, it's like you write it as some.
So this tau should be the flat coordinates.
So if I do this with a collabial threefold, let's say on the left hand side, then tau and rho are two flat coordinates? Or?
Well, tau is three complex variables, right? So. Right, so if you want to apply this, what you're going to have to do is take those three complex variables and let them depend on some other thing, right? Yeah, so then, I mean, it would be flat coordinates if we had a fully parameterized collection of genus 2 curves, but you might have, you know, only a two-parameter family of genus 2 curves. One thing I forgot to say is that there is... in some form, an analog of Kodaira's table for genus 2 degenerations. And so one has, in principle, a place to look to identify all the kind of brain phenomena, and only the very first few steps in that exercise have been carried out, but that's an interesting project for the future to sort of solidify this construction. Yes.
Is there any way to identify the coefficients of the modular forms directly from the heterotic string theory, or give a physical interpretation?
Well, so that would mean taking this tau parameter, which describes the moduli of the heterotic theories. And I mean, that is a flat coordinate for those heterotic theories, and somehow doing an expansion, a Q expansion there. But then exactly how the coefficients get related to how they came into here is kind of mysterious. Okay. The future schedule for the seminar is there might be a talk next week, but because Cybrick is giving a talk at 2, we might not have another talk at 4:30. And tentatively, 2 weeks from today, we'll have a talk called The Other Side of Fafian. You're excused. Me. Yeah.